Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? Man, I got a jam-packed show for you today. I'm all over the map. I got Republicans trying to repeal Obamacare for time number 8 zillion. I'm going to kick it off with that in just a second because it shows you a key difference between Democrats and Republicans. And although on this particular issue they look stupid, perhaps it's the Democrats in the long run that'll be stupid. Weird, kind of counterintuitive takeaway from that story, but like I said, I'll get to that in just a second here. I got Carly Fiorina struggling in the presidential polls, so she's starting to go nuclear and throw some Hail Marys, and it's bad. When you see a politician who's not that skilled at being a politician, when they get desperate, oh, it's ugly. They're liable to say anything. I mean, you could see right through the pandering from a mile away. It was just recently that she rooted against her alma mater in a football game. Who does that? She tweeted, "No, I'm with Iowa today." That's right. I mean, it's not because I'm trying to get votes, even though it's because I'm trying to get votes, but I'm with Iowa right now. And then they lost, and then people were saying on Twitter, hashtag Carly curse. So that backfired, and then, it's bad. So later on in the show, we have Vice News reporting on a positive update from that story we did the other day about the starving civilians in Syria. It looks like they're going to get some help. And Rand Paul gets a little bit touchy, man, talking about weed with Stephen Colbert. It's unexpected. Like, he's talking about libertarianism, and then left field, he's angry. It's strange video clips, so I want to break that down. And a bunch of other stuff, including what we didn't get to yesterday. There's an important story about the oppression of the Ahmadiyya community, so Ahmadi Muslims, and that's happening in Pakistan. That happens pretty much wherever they are, but it's indicative of a larger problem. So anyway, we're going to cover all that stuff and much more. Did I mention Marco Rubio? I'm going to be going after Marco Rubio for his pandering nonsense. Just stay right there. Let's kick it off here, and we'll do that with Obamacare. The Hill is reporting that Republicans in Congress repealed Obamacare. Now, needless to say, they've been trying to do this from the second it was passed, but back when it was originally passed, you had a majority of Democrats in the Senate, and it would never get through the Senate. Now, since the Republicans have actually taken control of the Senate, they've passed it. I believe this is the second time they've passed it through the Senate, a repeal of Obamacare. Obviously, it's not going anywhere, but nonetheless, they did it. I mean, the president has this thing called veto power. Maybe Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, might want to check that and see exactly what's going to happen in the end here. But let me give you the details, and then I'll explain why, in a counterintuitive way, this is actually a good political move on the part of the Republicans. Policy-wise, of course not. They've never been good on policy. They're Republicans. But in terms of strategy, it's actually a very intelligent plan, dare I say. So The Hill reports, quote, "The legislation would also defund Planned Parenthood for a year." Just anything that that helps people, anything that's good for the American people, they're like, yeah, let's just axe that. It passed by a vote of 240 to 181. Just two Republicans voted against it, and of course they were in swing districts. I believe they're from New York, so it was kind of a, hey, I'm going to save my own ass vote. Now, Obama, like I said, is 100% going to veto it, but they passed it anyway. Speaker Ryan said this, quote, "We are confronting the president with the hard, honest truth. Obamacare doesn't work. We've been at this, what, for 5 years now? We finally found what I think is the smart strategy to be able to get a bill on Obama's desk." Yeah, on his desk. But then you know where it's going to end? On his desk. This idea that it would ever go further than that, that's just nonsense. So if they were to get their way, which they won't, 22 million people would lose their health insurance. And this is repeal attempt number, we seriously lost count at this point. I'm not kidding. It's been like that for the past five or six repeal attempts where different media outlets have different numbers for how many times they've tried to repeal it, because it depends how you count it up. If you're talking about a full repeal, it's a certain number. If you're talking about just a defunding, that's another number. If you're talking about the symbolic attempts versus the actual attempts versus certain repealing certain provisions and leaving others in place, the numbers vary all over the place. But we're flirting with fucking 65. 65 repeal attempts, 66 repeal attempts. So here's the counterintuitive takeaway from this story. Hey, Democrats, watch and learn. Now, again, this has 0% chance of succeeding. They're not actually going to get it through. President Obama is going to veto it, and then we're going to move along. But think about it, man. This is an issue where Republicans know they're going to lose. Or actually, I shouldn't even say that. Some of them are probably stupid, don't even know how the system works, and they're like, me, vote against it. But some of them, like Speaker Ryan, he knows how the system works enough to know that this isn't going to work. But they do it anyway. So what's the purpose in doing it? Well, number one, you're shoring up your base to be more on your side. So that's good because it makes them excited to vote for you because you're actually doing stuff that they say they like. But then number two is sheer aggression works in the long run. Why? Because if you're uncompromising in the pursuit of what your policy goals are, then you're going to move the spectrum in your direction. So the compromise position becomes what used to be a pipe dream that your side wanted. And the Democrats do the polar opposite of this. So the go-to example on this one is gun reform. Now, after Sandy Hook, when children were slaughtered, they were massacred, they were gunned down while at school, what happened afterwards? The Democrats first, they were like, yeah, you know, we're going to do some, maybe ban some assault weapons, but maybe not, but maybe a little bit. We don't know. We're just throwing it out there. We're just flirting with the idea here. Fucking say it. Just come out and say it, but they don't say it. The actual proposed bill at first was a universal background check bill that crumbled. Then they caved to watered-down background check bill. What happened? They proposed that. They lost with, I think it was 56 votes in the Senate. You're thinking, Kyle, that doesn't make sense. 56 wins, right? Wrong. You need a supermajority. Why? Because they filibuster everything. The Republicans were filibustering everything. So they slapped it down, and then you had Republican politicians bragging on Twitter and on social media that they slapped it down. Mind you, the American people, a poll had just come out at the time. 90% of the American people said, let's do a universal background check. Republicans said no to that, and then no to the watered-down background check bill, the Manchin-Toomey bill, and then they bragged about it. Now, that was one attempt, fully one attempt that the Democrats did at trying to do gun reform. One attempt. One attempt. And did they bring it up again? Nope. They get slapped on the... You hurt my feelings. I think you bruised my ego. I'm going to go home and sit down and cry in the fetal position, and then I'll never try again to ever get my policy passed. That's my Harry Reid impression. This is how they think. This is what they do. Now, again, let's turn back to the Republicans here for a second. Look at what they do.
Yeah, I know we're not going to pass it, but I'm going to we're not going to get it into law, but I'm going to go ahead and vote on a repeal of Obamacare anyway. Why? I want to. I like that policy, so I'm going to go for that policy, and then President Obama's going to veto it, and then I'm going to pass it again, and then he's going to veto it again. I'm going to make him veto it 897 times. Why? Because that's what I'm in favor of. I like that policy, so I'm going to push for that. What? You got a problem with it?
Now, again, there's a 0% chance of passing. They're like, I don't care. I don't care. I'm going to do it because, in my view, it's the right thing to do, so I'm going to do it. The Democrats, we have people getting slaughtered left and right with guns in the U.S., 32,000 gun deaths a year, one attempt at a watered-down background check bill. What attempt? So this is why one of the reasons why the spectrum in the U.S. has been pulled to the right, because the nature of the Republicans and the Democrats is just different. The Democrats are conciliatory and compromising and weak, and they change their minds so much. There was a great tweet I saw last night. It said, a liberal is somebody who's so open-minded that he doesn't want to take his own side in a fight. Kind of true. So what you need is, you need Democrats and liberals and progressives who take their policy positions, which, by the way, the American people support, according to the polls, and then they're uncompromising. They say, you want to play this game? Let's play this game. Oh, you slap down my watered-down background check bill? Here's a universal background check bill. Every time you slap it down, I'm going to come back with an even tougher package. And if you vote it down, fine. Watch what I do. I'm going to go out in the public square. I'm going to go on TV all over the place. I'm going to make appearances nonstop. I'm going to campaign in your districts. And I will show the American people that you're a fucking fascist. I'll show them that you're a dictator. I'll show them that you don't care about what they want. I'll run ads exposing your exact corrupt ties to multinational corporations and billionaires, how you guys take money and you do their bidding. Wonderful. Watch me put it in an ad, and then watch me crush you. Okay? This is how you play politics. This is how you win. But the Republicans, who are stupid on policy, wrong on almost every issue, they're the only ones with strength. They repeal Obamacare fucking damn near 70 times, and they act like, what do you mean? This is just a Tuesday. Yeah, I repealed, I went after Planned Parenthood. And look, the arguments they used, too, made no sense, but it didn't matter, because they're Republicans. So what do they say? Yeah, we're abortion! We're killing babies! Get rid of Planned Parenthood! It's like, well, wait. 97% of what Planned Parenthood does has nothing to do with abortion. And then the 3% that does, there's no tax dollars funding it. It's coming out of people's pockets. And there's no late-term abortions. So there's no pain. This is all happening before viability. Doesn't matter. Facts don't matter. Me, aggression. Me, angry. Repeal now. Fight. And the Democrats are in the corner, right on all the substance. Ah, don't hit me. Okay, here. I'll do what you want. This is the situation we're in today, man. God, it's so ugly. So gross. All right, now let's go to Carly Fiorina. And it's time for a mock fest. I have a clip on this. I gotta find it. Oh, here it is. So Carly Fiorina is struggling in the presidential polls big time, and she's not really doing herself any favors with her media appearances. She went on Morning Joe to talk policy, and she unveiled what she views as a big idea to fix America. Carly, tell us what it is.
I understand how to get this economy growing and growing again, and it means that we not only have to care about big business, we have to care about small businesses, which we are destroying at a record rate.
How are we
because
destroying
small businesses?
Small business?
Create two-thirds of the new jobs.
Yeah. So
we're destroying small businesses because we have a 73,000-page tax code.
How do we get the small businesses growing again?
Well, let's start with the first item on my blueprint to take our country back. And by the way, that is what we have to do. We have to take our future back, our politics back, our government back, and our country back. How do we get our economy growing and growing again? The first item on my blueprint to take our country back is to take a 73,000-page tax code and get it down to 3 pages. And while all the pundits say that can't be done, the truth is there's a 20-year-old plan for a 3-page tax code. And why is that important? Because a small business like I started out in, or my husband Frank, who Mika still loves, I started out driving a tow truck for, they can't handle 73,000 pages.
Okay, that makes no sense. Now, everybody should understand that what I do is technically a small business. Not once have I ever said, ah, God, not sure what I'm going to do this next year coming up. I mean, the tax code is about 73,000 pages. I'm so stunned by that and taken aback by that, that now I can't go about doing my job. How am I supposed to report the news? How am I supposed to upload stuff to YouTube? What am I going to do? 73,000 pages. If only it was like 10 pages, then I'd be able to do what I want. This is... Carly Fiorina is proposing this as a serious idea. Like, just make it 3 pages, and then small businesses, poof, will be created. What evidence do you have to back that up? You don't have any evidence. You're just making it up. And then also, I get it. If you want to say the tax code is too complex and we should make it more simple, I agree with you on that. But why 3 pages? Why just an arbitrary, I don't know, we rolled some dice. It came up on 3. I said, fuck it. 3-page tax code. But that
that's not intelligent. Like, there's no – they don't bother making logical connections. They just say shit. Like, there's – they don't – they can't point to a study. They can't point to evidence or data that says – when you implement a three-page tax code that says X, Y, and Z, you have X amount of job creation, and then everybody's good. No, it's just like, I made up this idea that I'm going to pretend as positive effects, even though I haven't proven that, and it's not clear at face value, and I'm just going to say it, and you need to accept it. But I'm not going to accept it, because that doesn't make any fucking sense. Compare what she's saying to somebody like Bernie Sanders, who goes into mind-numbing detail about all this stuff. I said this during one of the debates. Bernie Sanders was asked a substantive question in one of the debates about one issue. He answered with substance on like five or six different issues. He just kept going, details, facts, connecting the dots, exactly what kind of tax he's going to do and why. And then here you got Carly Fiorina. We need to take our country back. We need to make America great again. And in order to do that, what we're going to do is take the tax code, which is over 70,000 pages, and make it three. I'm done. Drop the mic. I'm outie. But again, there's no logical connection there. You're just saying stuff. Now, another aspect of this is Carly, she's like...
Yeah, the economy, oh, it's wrecked, it's wrecked.
Okay, are there gigantic problems with the economy? Yes. I talk about that all the time. Stuff like income inequality, for example, poverty. These are the real issues. But in terms of how the economy is doing now versus how it was doing under George W. Bush, there is no comparison. This idea of, like, Obama's waging a war on the private sector. There's been over 12 million private sector jobs created under Obama. So your talking points are just, hello, they're outdated. Let's move along here. Find something. And this is another problem with the Republicans in terms of how they attack. So they're good with their aggression, but the problem is it never makes any sense. Like, there's so many legitimate issues to go after Obama about, and there's so many issues – in terms of the economy to discuss. They don't go to any of the legitimate issues, and they manage to find the few areas where there is no legitimate criticism. Small business creation, there's an issue there. But okay, so you're saying private sector job creation, there's a problem. No, but that's the area where Obama's created over 12 million. That's an area where there's not a problem. You could say the wages were too low, and I'd agree with you, but you didn't say that. You just said, I don't know, small business, something. It's just, it bothers me how unserious these people are. And then I got to show you one more thing here because Carly took to Twitter afterwards to give more details on her policy ideas. Here's what she said. Liberal policies enrage me because they claim to care about people's lives, but in reality they destroy lives. Progressive policies make it worse. Oh, yes, Carly. What a thoughtful, poignant, deep argument you made there. It's like they're children running for president.
I me no like progressive policies. Liberal policies bad for people.
Again, where are the deets, bro? Hit me with some details. Hit me, baby, one more time like Britney Spears with some information, just some information. And here's, of course, the reality of the situation. In 2013, uber-liberal Denmark was ranked, quote, the happiest country in the world. Oops. Now, why is that? Well, they go on to explain that it's because they have paid vacation time by law. They get a lot of vacation time. Healthcare is a right there. Gender equality is something that's prioritized. And they just have a cadre of liberal policies. And people are like, this is fantastic. Society doesn't say fuck you and leave me behind if I fall on hard times. Everybody's here to pick me up. And then when people do well, of course we allow people to do well and get rich, but everything is within reason, and everybody loves each other and cares for each other, and we're all one big liberal happy family. But what does Carly Fiorina do? Looks at the data. That was a study, by the way. They quantitatively looked at it. She's like, no, that doesn't count.
Me say liberal bad, conservative good. Vote for me. Three-page tax code.
Okay. Now let me go to Marco Rubio, and as bad as I was mocking Carly Fiorina there.
I think I might go after Marco Rubio even more. Marco Rubio released an unbelievable pandering presidential ad. Let's take a look and then we'll discuss.
Our goal is eternity, the ability to live alongside our Creator for all time, to accept the free gift of salvation offered to us by Jesus Christ. The struggle on a daily basis as a Christian is to remind ourselves of this. The purpose of our life is to cooperate with God's plan. To those who much has been given, much is expected, and we will be asked to account for that. Were your treasures stored up on earth or in heaven? And to me, I try to allow that to influence me in everything that I do. I'm Marco Rubio, and I approve of this message.
Oh, that's one of the grossest ads I've ever seen in my life. Okay, now I'm going to get to the substance, or lack thereof, of substance in this ad in a second. But you do know why he did this, right? He did this because the Iowa caucus is the first stop in the election season. And for those of you who don't know, they're super evangelical Christian over there. So they have a history of voting for crackpots. So one of the last times around, you know who won? Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum won the Iowa caucus. So you have these political experts who whisper in Marco Rubio's ear, no, see, now you have to be uber-Christian to try to win in Iowa to get us off on the right foot to then move along and try to win other primaries. So it's always hilarious to me how these people who think they're Washington insiders and they know how the game works, they almost always have bad opinions. I mean, these are the same people who yell at the Democrats to always compromise with the Republicans, no matter how crazy the Republicans are, and the Democrats can never go on the offense. When the Democrats do that, they get their ass handed to them in virtually every election, but then they come back with the same fucking advice next year. Don't be aggressive! Don't be progressive! Shh! Compromise, and that's your way to go. They never know what the fuck they're talking about. And these people don't know what they're talking about either. Marco, that's a horrible, horrible, horrible idea for an ad. So, what Marco needs to do is play your role, dipshit. How have you not figured this out yet? You're the establishment fallback candidate. You're not going to out-Christian Mike Huckabee or Rick Santorum, who are in the race right now. You're not even going to out-Christian Ted Cruz, dipshit. So what are you doing? What are you doing? No, what you have to do is you have to play your role. You're the establishment fallback. The establishment fallback guy was Mitt Romney. The last time around, he got the nomination. It was John McCain in 08. He got the nomination then. Why are you not playing your role? You're trying to outdo everybody in the worst possible ways. You're shooting yourself in the foot, dude. He doesn't get it. There was a story we covered the other day. Rubio's trying to out-hawk everybody on foreign policy. Don't do it. The candidate of war, the most hawkish candidate, never wins. Never wins. Look, going back to Barry Goldwater, we proved that case. He was the guy who was the guy who's going to unleash the bomb. And then what happened? He was like, I gave over him. He got destroyed. Rubio's like, I'm militaristic and I'm super Christian. Shut the fuck up. If you want to be successful and you have a shot, you have to just play your role. Don't make too much noise. Be the establishment fallback. And then people will revert to you if they get too scared to vote for a guy like Trump or somebody like Cruz who are in front of you right now. So, okay, putting aside the strategy angle of this, what does that even mean? What does your ad even mean? This is unbelievable. We live in a secular country, and we got people running the functional equivalent of Allahu Akbar ads. Who accepts this? Who looks at this and they're like, that's the guy I want, the guy who's talking about fairy tales and mythology and Narnia and the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And he said, our goal is eternity. I don't know what that means. Nobody really knows what that means. You want to live forever? Well, you want to get to heaven? You want to go bowling with Elvis Presley? I don't. What are you saying? Our goal is eternity, to live with our Creator. Again, I don't. What do you? It's just nonsense. It means nothing. These are just religious theocratic words that are supposed to make Christians go, me lack. But again, like I said, you're not going to get the Christian vote anyway. That's going to Santorum. That's going to Huckabee. That's going to Cruz. So it's just a waste of an ad, is what it is. But there you have it. You have Marco Rubio, I also love this irony. He's running an ad uber-Christian. Okay, somebody should ask him. So you're in favor of bringing in the Syrian refugees now, right? Oh, Mr. Christian, I love my Creator. I love me some Jesus. Okay, well, in the Bible, they're crystal clear when it comes to the issue of refugees. The sojourners, you're supposed to treat them like your brother. You're supposed to bring them in your house. It's not even a question. You have to be good to them. You're in favor of that now, right? Oh, no, that's weird. So you're Christian except for when you disagree with the part that's clear in the Bible. What about the rich, by the way? You know, you say you love Jesus. One of the things that's also, there's no two sides of it in the Bible, is they're not fond of the rich. The story of Lazarus is very simple. You just can't get into heaven if you were rich on earth. Heaven's for poor people. It's not for the rich. Passage after passage after passage. Jesus was a pacifist. How are you hawking a militaristic foreign policy? And you're like, but I love Jesus. But Jesus is a fucking pacifist. Turn the other cheek. Hey, you hit one cheek, I'll present you, I'll hit that one too. I guess that's what you got to say to ISIS, right? If you really want to be the biblical candidate. Helping the poor. Do you want to help the poor? You're in favor of universal health care now, right? You're in favor of education for everybody, right? No, you're not, because you're pandering. You're pandering. You don't believe it. You're not deeply religious. And this is just a gross effort to try to get votes, and everybody can see through it. All right, let me take a break here. And then when we come back, Saudi Arabia and Iran, proxy war is ongoing over there. It ain't pretty. We're going to get to that. And also Rand Paul and Stephen Colbert. It gets a wee bit weird when they start talking about marijuana. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Catch a fire, fired up, corrupt.
Son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys.
All right, let's shut that off here. All right, let's get into some stuff. I guess you could just call it some Sunni Shia stuff here. Broader proxy war is heating up. Amid the rising tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran, Saudi Arabia decided to bomb a school for the blind in Yemen. Stay classy. So for those of you who don't know the backstory on Yemen, it's basically a proxy in the broader Sunni-Shia war. Shia Houthi rebels took over the government there, ousting the Sunnis, and Saudi has been bombing everything in sight since then. So Vice News reports on this, quote, United Nations officials have confirmed that aircraft from the Saudi-led coalition struck a rehabilitation center for the blind in Yemen's capital early on Tuesday morning. At least 81 civilians were killed across Yemen in December, and a further 109 were injured. Since late March, the UN has confirmed 2,795 civilian deaths in Yemen. They've been using cluster bombs, which are illegal under international law because they're notoriously imprecise. You're going to get a lot of civilians if you use them. By the way, who's supplying these cluster bombs to Saudi Arabia? You guessed it, the United States. We're also helping them with the coordinates on the map. Hey, attack here. And then they attack. And by the way, also on the bombs, it says made in USA. So that's wonderful. You know, people who have nothing to do with us, our weapons are being used to kill them, and then they get to see, oh, look, that was made in Ohio. And then that breeds anti-Americanism further. Just seems like an all-around bad idea. Plus, arming a Salafi terror state, which is what Saudi Arabia is, which officially has the same mentality as ISIS, you know, not something I'd do if you actually give a shit about human rights and civil liberties and you care about international law. So in the past few days, there are also allegations of Saudi Arabia bombing a wedding in Yemen. Again, this is a recurring thing. And attacking the Iranian embassy in Yemen. Now, they actually missed and they hit a house that was across the street, but that house belonged to the former Shia president of Yemen. So, oh boy, it was one or the other. Either they were trying to attack the Iranian embassy, or they were trying to attack the house of the former Shia president, who I think it was two terms ago before the ousting of the last president, who was Sunni. So this is not good, and, you know, the fighting in Yemen has been happening for a while, but the tensions have gotten worse recently because Saudi Arabia executed Sheikh Nimr al-Nimr, who was a Shia activist. They executed him and many other people, but in Iran there was a giant backlash to that because they executed a Shia activist. So in Iran they stormed the Saudi embassy and burned it down, and they named the street with the Saudi embassy on it al-Nimr Street. And then Saudi Arabia was like, okay, we're cutting off all diplomatic ties with you, and you're anybody who's here that's Iranian, they have 48 hours to get out. And then this happens, where they maybe, maybe not kind of attacked the Iranian embassy, and they're just bombing civilians. By the way, over 50% civilian death rate. It doesn't look good, man. So this is one of those stories that unfortunately gets very little coverage, but it's a very serious story, and it's a continued proxy in this broader Sunni-Shia war. And even Syria is that. A lot of people don't discuss that or don't think about that, but Iran, of course, backs Assad. Assad being the Shia Alawite leader in Syria. Hezbollah is also on the side of Assad. And then on the other side, you have many Sunni militant groups, including jihadist groups and Islamist groups. Many of them get monetary backing from Saudi Arabia. So the tensions are kind of boiling over, and this is something that should scare everybody. Okay, now we give you a positive update. These are rare, so cherish it. Vice News is reporting on a very positive development about a story we covered a few days ago. Civilians were starving in Syria, caught between the rebels and the government forces, and experiencing a blockade. Well, today we learned this. Quote, the United Nations announced on Thursday that it would be delivering food aid to the besieged Syrian town of Madaya with the cooperation of the Syrian government, as over 40,000 people in the mountain village face starvation. People are shooting their guns in the air to celebrate. That was happening today. The town, which lies between the Lebanese border and the capital of Damascus, has been blockaded since last summer by Syrian forces and Hezbollah. A small contingent of rebel forces from the group Arar al-Sham are holed up inside Madaya. So that was the reason why they were doing it, because Arar al-Sham is al-Qaeda. They're affiliated with al-Qaeda, just like al-Nusra is, which is the official al-Qaeda branch in Syria, and they're part of the rebels. So Hezbollah and the Syrian government said, okay, there are al-Qaeda people in this town, and they use the brutal tactic of let's cut off supplies to the town, starve out these al-Qaeda guys, or just have them die, and then we'll address the situation afterwards. But needless to say, it was overwhelmingly civilians in there, so they were starving too, and as a result of coverage from the media and international pressure from human rights groups, we actually got a positive outcome from this, where the Syrian government said, okay, you UN can go in there and they can feed everybody, and then, you know, we can address the situation after that. So this is actually a win, and it's a win because of brave media figures actually on the ground. Like I was saying, there were some Vice reporters who were on the ground in Madaya. I mean, that's such a... Try to wrap your mind around that. Like, traveling to a place where people are starving because there's a blockade, and you go in there, do you know your future? Do you know if you can get out? Do you know? Because they say that some people were gunned down when trying to escape. So it's brave to even go in there. I mean, it's insane that this situation exists in the year 2016. But you have brave journalists who went in there, who covered this. The story blew up. Then you had international human rights groups put pressure on the Syrian forces and the government and on Hezbollah. And then they said, okay, no, let's get the UN in there and have them feed them. So, you know, this is an important story and a telling story about how if you do the work and you're fair in your coverage, you shine a light on something, the media can have a positive effect, the international human rights groups can have a positive effect. And like I said at the time when we covered this story, if they weren't going to allow them in, this is in a time when I would even say, and I'm a non-interventionist and I don't use military force unless we're attacked and all that stuff, but for humanitarian aid and food, yeah, I would have been in favor of the UN attempting to fly by and drop food or something in there. But we didn't even need to get to that point because the coverage and the pressure from the international community led to them saying, oh, just come in, just go ahead and do it. So there's your update on the story. It's rare, but we have good news. Okay. Next. Rand Paul gets weird. So Rand Paul went on Stephen Colbert's show, and there was a really strange moment at the end of the interview where Rand Paul appears to get mad over a question about weed. Now, most of the interview was normal and perfectly fine and lovely, and they seemed to be vibing okay, and then out of nowhere, this.
think that people on the left, Ron Wyden, actually, I work with a little more in the Senate, but he would call himself, I think, a progressive Democrat. He and I have worked together on NSA reform, trying to end the bulk collection of all our phone records, trying to bring troops home from Afghanistan, and trying to have a less interventionist or more realistic foreign policy.
What about on drug policy reform?
You're not going to talk about pot, are you?
Are you a cop? Because if you're a cop, you have to tell me if you're a cop or this is entrapment.
I've always said before we would not talk about pot, Stephen.
You tried to sell me pot that day.
No.
You tried to sell me on the idea of changing sentencing guidelines for pot. I should have said the entire sentence. I apologize. Tell you what, please come again and we won't talk about pot.
Okay.
Senator Paul, thank you. It's a pleasure. Senator Rand Paul, everybody. We'll be right back.
Oh, that was weird. That got weird. Now, I know that we're just 100% speculating here, but might as well. I think they probably did have some kind of conversation backstage where Rand Paul was like, hey, man, don't ask me about pot. Hook me up. And I think that he believes that's better for his campaign because he doesn't want to scare off the base any more than he already has, because he needs the base voters to do well in the primary. And it's a political calculation on his part. And he's probably listening to his own staffers who tell him, you got to kind of try to hide your pure libertarian side here and hedge a little bit more than your father used to do, because you're going to get your ass handed to you unless you play the game more and act more like somebody else instead of yourself. So I do think they spoke backstage. I do think they had some kind of tentative agreement, and then Colbert asked the question, and then Rand got pissed. And he was like, I thought we said we were going to talk about this. That was ugly. That was ugly. But here's why this is actually an important story. Rand, you're wrong. Why would you not talk about that? Rand has been trying desperately from day one in this campaign to hide everything about himself that makes him better than the other Republican candidates. I mean, at times it comes out when he's talking about foreign policy and stuff, and you realize he's just more sane than the other people on the stage, and he's more non-interventionist than everybody else on stage. But with other issues, social issues, he hasn't highlighted that, you know, hey, I believe the government should really stay out of your life, and you should be able to make whatever decisions you want as long as you're not hurting anybody. And yes, that includes with drugs, too. He's trying to hide that fact. But Rand, that's politically stupid, because he bought into the nonsense and the stupid beliefs of people who don't know what the fuck they're talking about. I mean, look at the polling data. Millennial Republicans, a majority of them, I think it's 52%, say they want to legalize marijuana. Rand, that's who the fuck do you think your base is? Okay, if anybody's going to vote for you in a Republican primary, it's going to be young Republicans. But you're alienating them by that. Don't talk about weed! Yeah, I'm pro-weed, but don't say that. I might actually get votes if you say that. That's the problem, man. From day one, you should have been yourself. You should have taken all the things that make you unique and highlight them and make an argument for it. I mean, like I said, a majority of millennial Republicans are already on your side on that issue. But why not try to convince other people, too? Why not try to get other Republicans on your side by actually making an argument, a principled argument, for small government? I mean, you're selling yourself short in terms of how appealing you would be if you're just yourself amid that clown of idiots on your side. So you should have been yourself. You should have been more libertarian. You should have made aggressive arguments for it from day one, and then perhaps you'd be doing better in the polls. Probably not leading. Apparently it's Trump's time because he's a buffoon and he's loud and he's obnoxious, and people feel like they want that anti-establishment, fervor and candidate that represents that. But you certainly would be doing better than you are right now if you let it all hang out from day one and you weren't afraid to talk about marijuana. And in fact, quite the opposite, if you talked about stuff like that more. Because the future of the Republican Party, if they even have a future at this point, is going to be in candidates more like Rand Paul. Because guess what? The overzealous, uber-religious variety and flavor of Republican, that's dying out. The ones who try to socially control you, given enough time, they're going to be a thing of the past, and we're all going to be better off for it.
Okay. Now, I'm going to do one more here before we take a break. And this one's going to be on gay marriage. You're probably thinking, wait, what? I thought that we already got that legalized. Can we move on here? Nope, we can't, because there are some people who still want to insist upon fighting this fight.
They lost, but nonetheless, they're going to continue to fight. How Republican of them. Alabama's Chief Justice doubled down on his defiance of gay marriage. He issued an administrative order that contradicts the Supreme Court's ruling this week. The International Business Times reports, the decision tells lower court judges in the state to hold fast and continue denying gay couples wedding licenses. He wrote that the Supreme Court ruling last year upholding gay marriage conflicts with the state's constitution and that judges have a duty to deny same-sex couples seeking marriage contracts. Okay, so here's why I love this story. This is the same guy who screams about the Constitution whenever he thinks it suits his argument. Now, we've spoken about this guy before. He's the Alabama Chief Justice. He made headlines because he was saying when the Supreme Court made their decision on gay marriage. He's like, I ain't going to do it. It's not going to happen on my watch. And he thought he was some kind of hero. He thought he was some kind of hero because he was taking this stand on the side of bigotry and intolerance. And he totally ignores that the Constitution, Article 6, Clause 2, demands that he listen to the Supreme Court. It says, quote, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, are all and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Okay, so do you get this? That's the supremacy clause of the Constitution. The idea is federal law, federal decisions override state law and state decisions. And what this guy is saying is exactly the opposite of that. He's saying, yeah, I know. Okay, so the Supreme Court and now the federal government recognize same-sex marriage. I don't care. I, somebody who's less than them, underneath them with the way our system functions, I'm going to override them by saying, I disagree, and here's an order where I'm contradicting you. Okay, well then just don't come around anymore and scream about how you love the Constitution and scream about how you're an originalist. And I mean, this is the same thing that Justice Scalia does all the time. He always says, oh, no, see, a guy like me and why I'm so much more intellectual and sophisticated than these stupid liberal justices is that I just go by the original intent, the original meaning of the Constitution, and I never let my personal biases get in the way. Well, that's total bullshit. You do that all the time. In fact, I'd argue you do it way more than the liberal judges do. Look at this guy. I love the Constitution, except when it disagrees with my ideology. Then I will disregard the supremacy clause of the Constitution and try to override what is already the law of the land and what is already in the Constitution. No, it's unbelievable. The classic go-to example for Justice Scalia on this one is if you talk about immigration reform versus marijuana laws, he exposes his hypocrisy. So he argued in an Arizona case when they tried to have their own border policy. He said, we got to let them make their own decisions. Why? They're a state. States have rights, or else they cease to even be a state. The federal government is overreaching by telling them that we enforce border policy, not them. So he was arguing, states' rights overrides it. Flip to a marijuana case, what does he argue? The exact opposite. The supremacy clause is clear. Federal law overrides state law. I don't care if at the state level you legalize marijuana, federal law overrides it. Which is it, big guy? Does federal law override it or not? Why, when it comes to border control, you say, well, no, the state should control that, not the federal government. When it comes to marijuana, it's the opposite, because you just go by your opinion. Same thing here. This guy hates gay marriage. He's like, I'm just going to override the Supreme Court. As I still scream about the Constitution and how I love the Constitution, you don't love the Constitution, spare me. And furthermore, what's this really about? God. That's what it's about. This guy's a bumpkin who wants to control everybody with his interpretation of his God and his religion, and he wants to cram it down your throat. And here's what he said, quote, "This power over marriage, which came from God under our organic law, is not to be redefined by the United States Supreme Court or any federal court." Yeah, but we're not supposed to be ruled by your view of your God. We don't all agree that your idea of natural law from God is indeed true. In fact, I disagree with that. I don't believe in a God, and there are people who do believe in God who have a totally different interpretation than you do, who say, hey, in my view, God says we're all equal, therefore I think gays should have the right to get married because they're equal to heterosexual people. Somebody can make that argument. Then they get to say, God is the reason why, so that's it, end of conversation. No, we have a government. We have a secular government. We have a democracy. We have constitutional rights. We have law. We don't go by, I mean, this guy really believes. Hey, my God gets to override anything and everything that's already established in the system. Well, that's a fucking theocracy. Guys, there are countries like that, you know. Hey, you want to live in that kind of country? Go scream Allahu Akbar and join a place that has Sharia law. You know, hey, you'd fit in very well in Saudi. Granted, you believe in a different God, but they want to control people's lives in every way, shape, or form. You want to control people's lives in every way, shape, or form. So there's a lot more common ground there, and you also both believe in myths. It's common ground there, too. So, you know, you'd fit in a lot better over there, but here in enlightened territory, we like to actually democratically debate things, discuss things, care about constitutional rights, care about the structure of the system and the process. We don't just have bumpkins override stuff because they feel like it, because mommy and daddy told them that their space fairy allows them to override the entire system. Your faith is just your opinion, and your opinion is pretty shitty and not backed up by evidence. Okay. Well, that was fun. Now, it's amazing. He can't do that, but he does it anyway. He's like, okay, no more gay marriage. Wait, what? No, you're a state in the United States of America. The Supreme Court ruled we're allowing gay marriage. We're interpreting that under the Equal Protection Clause. He's like, I don't care. I'm just not going to listen to that. All right, well, then you should be locked up. You should be locked up. What do you want me to say? You're disregarding something that is the law. What, you think it's different because you're a judge? No, you're still underneath the authority of the Supreme Court and of federal decisions, so you're just wrong. How about that? Like, he acts like it's a matter of opinion or that he can actually override it. This is a guy who's a justice in Alabama who doesn't know the most basic facts about our Constitution and about the way our system functions. He doesn't know. He's like, I disagree with gay marriage. Nobody cares. Nobody gives a shit if you do. Okay, Alabama's in the U.S. The U.S. has gay marriage. I'm going to need you to shut the fuck up. How about that? All right. Let me take a break here. And then when we come back, we have a Kentucky woman who was arrested because she beat a disabled man with a metal cane because he didn't believe in God. Ugh. Sweet Jesus, what are we doing here? What are we doing? So there's some anti-atheist stuff. Then we have other anti-Muslim stuff from Ahmadi Muslims. They're a particularly persecuted branch, and I'll explain why. And that's happening in Pakistan. And then a bunch of other stuff, including free speech apparently doesn't apply to giving a shit about Palestinians. And a monkey took a selfie, and PETA wants that monkey to have rights. I can't, man. I can't. That story is hilarious. Like, okay, PETA, I get it. Yeah, I agree that we should care about animals and, you know, they should live a good life, even if they're eventually going to be food. Like, don't cram them into little cages and shit. I agree totally. But PETA literally argued that monkeys should have copyright abilities. Like the monkey who took a selfie, he owns the copyright to that. Oh, God, stop. Oh, please shut up. Stop. You're just delegitimizing the entire animal rights movement, and I don't want you to do that. Okay, so I'm going off on the rant here already, but I got to save that for later. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Guys, let's get weird. Let's get weird. All right, here's a sad one. A Kentucky woman was arrested after she beat a disabled man with his metal cane until it broke because he dared to say that he didn't believe in God. So Raw Story reports, 49-year-old Laura Reed was visiting the victim in his home, and at one point she asked him if he believed in God. The man jokingly replied he didn't. Reed became so enraged by his answer that she allegedly picked up his metal cane and beat him over the head and body, and then she robbed him. His story just gets more and more absurd as we go along here, and sad. So the man was unable to leave because of his disability, and Reed stayed in his home for 3 hours after the assault, and then left with his cell phone, keys, and wallet containing credit cards and $50 in cash. And then get this, man, he was forced to crawl to a local gas station in order to seek help. He suffered serious injuries, including a concussion, a broken arm, multiple bruises, cuts, and abrasions. Now, thankfully, she was just arrested and charged with assault, robbery, and unlawful imprisonment, I guess because she stayed around for 3 hours after she had beat the shit out of him and watched him in pain. So there's a few different angles to this story that we should talk about. First of all, how about anti-atheist bigotry? That's a phrase that virtually nobody uses, but anti-atheist bigotry is pretty fucking pervasive. Okay? I mean, there are governments that are officially bigoted against atheists. Like, they don't allow atheists. You know what? Saudi Arabia is the perfect example where they decided, hey, all atheists are terrorists. By definition, they say, if you're an atheist, you're a terrorist. I find that so fucking mind-blowing because I'm somebody who is an atheist, and I have sworn off violence in all cases except for self-defense. That's pretty much the opposite of a terrorist, terrorism being defined as doing violence in the name of a political or religious ideology. And again, the irony is, who are the real terrorists there? They're the terrorists! Because they want to do violence against atheists for a political reason. They don't like atheists. It doesn't fit in with their fundamentalist religion. So they kill apostates, for example. They say atheists are terrorists. You're the real problem here. But anti-atheist bigotry is codified doctrine in many places around the world. And even in places that one would say, oh, well, you know, hey, this is an enlightened Western civilization with rule of law, and we care deeply about all minorities here. That's simply not true. I mean, for example, in the U.S., I think it's 7 states that still have on the state books laws against atheists. Some of them say, hey, atheists cannot run for public office in this state. Now, make no mistake about it, those are unconstitutional because federal law overrides state law, and on the federal level, that's not the case, okay? But nonetheless, nobody cares enough to take them off the books. Nobody cares enough to say, okay, you know what? It's been a while. I mean, we had, like, when there were anti-interracial marriage laws, those were struck down. I believe the latest ones were in, like, the 80s. I guess everybody was like, oh, my God, this is – how the fuck do you still have that on the law books? It's crazy. Now, again, it's not enforced that they don't let atheists run. So it's not – the laws are not in effect, but the letters are still on the state law books. If for some reason civilization vanishes and you have aliens who discover U.S. law books, state law books, you know, a few generations down the road, the first thing they're going to say is, okay, well, atheists, they were not allowed to run. They were not treated fairly or objectively or kindly or anything like that. It is a persecuted minority where you have a green light to persecute them. Somebody was beaten the fuck up because he dared to say, yeah, I don't believe in God. This is unbelievable, man. And then the other important aspect of this is you have a clear example where you're highlighting the problem with fundamentalist religious thinking. So obviously the overwhelming majority of religious people are good people and they're not fundamentalists and they don't abide by this kind of thinking. But clearly the woman who did this is a fundamentalist. And the problem is just rank tribalism. So she has defined herself as a good person because of the group or the clan that she's in. She's in the in-group. She's in the cool group. And then since this other guy does not believe in God, now he's the other. He's in the out-group, bad guy. And then now it's totally okay and justifiable, and indeed in her mind is the right thing to do, to beat the shit out of him and steal his shit. Why? Because he's the other. What am I going to do? He's a bad guy. And this goes to show you that many people believe that atheism equals immorality. Atheism equals you're a bad person. You're admitting, I don't believe in right and wrong. I don't care about treating people kindly. And again, irony is a theme in this segment here, but what's the irony? She's like that. She doesn't believe in a true moral code and ethical code of right and wrong, and this is a good way to act and a bad way to act and be kind to everybody. No, because she's the one who's doing the violence. But she defined herself as good no matter what, so hey, I can go ahead and do whatever I want to you because you're the other, you're the bad guy, just by virtue of the fact of who you are and what group you belong to and what descriptor, can be placed on you, you're bad. So I can beat the shit out of you with a metal cane, steal your shit, and I still think I'm the good guy and you're the bad guy. How grotesque is this kind of thinking? And you see it manifest itself in ultra-nationalism, too, and, you know, racism and strong ethnic identities, too, that put down the other. So you see this all over the place, but this is a clear example of it right here, and these are two important issues that never get discussed. So, I mean, I never hear the term anti-atheist bigotry said outside of, like, this show, but it's a serious issue we need to discuss, and another issue that clearly needs to be discussed is the problem with extremist fundamentalist religious thinking, which fosters this kind of action, and indeed she walks away thinking she's more moral after being clearly immoral. Okay, now, let's go to an interesting story that highlights another big problem in terms of bigotry. Ahmadi Muslims often get fucked over. Okay. Abdul Shakur is an 81-year-old Pakistani Ahmadi Muslim, and he just received an 8-year prison sentence for selling a book, selling another religious book, an Ahmadiyya book. Kashif Chaudhry reports at Dawn.com, quote, under Pakistan's blasphemy laws, Ahmadis can be imprisoned for a myriad of reasons, from identifying a worship place as a mosque, identifying as a Muslim, or distributing Ahmadiyya books, even if this means selling it to a fellow Ahmadi. So let me pause here to explain to you guys that Ahmadiyya, or Ahmadi Muslims, believe that the promised Messiah, or the Mahdi, already returned, and he appeared, quote, in the likeness of Jesus, and he advocated peace. So you know how people often say when you talk about, Islam, or you talk about fundamentalist Muslims, hey, where are all the moderates speaking out against this? Where are the moderate schools of Islam coming out and arguing against it? Well, the Ahmadi community is only exactly that. They're exactly what you're looking for. You could probably argue the Ahmadi community or the Sufi community would be like the antithesis within Islam of the Salafi school of thought. So fundamentalist Muslims in Pakistan, they can't have that. They don't want this peaceful version of Islam to rise because it's different. It's the other. We don't agree that the Mahdi came. So, they're angry about this. They don't like them. And so they just persecute them and lock them up. And they have anti-Ahmadi laws that are rampant. They continue here. Shakur Bahai is no stranger to being harassed for his faith. In 1974, his house and shop were ransacked by an anti-Ahmadi mob. In 1985, he was charged with blasphemy for profession of his faith. In 1990, he was given a 3-year prison sentence after a local cleric filed a complaint against him for wearing a ring that bore a Quranic inscription. And just last year, Shakur Bahai was harassed and had his store vandalized again by local police. All right, so again, just to be very specific here, the fundamentalist Muslim community in Pakistan just thinks, well, we're not even going to tolerate a liberal version, a liberal interpretation of our religion. So we disagree with this branch of Islam, Ahmadiyya, and we're so against them that if they wear a Quranic ring that has a Quranic verse on it, we're going to throw them in jail, or we're going to beat them up, or we're going to persecute them. We're going to oppress them. I mean, just for a second, think about how backwards that is. Because it's like bigotry on top of bigotry. It's like the inception of bigotry. Bigotry, bigotry, bigotry. It's all within each other. Because it's not even just bigotry against the other. It's bigotry against, from within the Muslim community, a disagreement from within the community where people say, hey, I'm Muslim, but I think we should basically do unto others as we would like done unto us, and we should, you know, act kind of like Jesus, and that should be our philosophy. How dare you? And again, this reminds me of the story that we did about Saudi Arabia recently, where they banned a magazine from coming in. It was either Time Magazine or Newsweek or something like that. There was a magazine that was going to be released in Saudi. They banned that issue. Why? Because in it, they argued for liberal Islam. So not only is it, you know, illegal to do apostasy or be an atheist, they're like, no, not even liberal interpretations of our religion do we allow. Do we allow? That's unbelievable. So this is just beyond fucked up. Thousands of Ahmadis have been arrested under anti-Ahmadi laws, and quote, they are fully endorsed by all religious clergy of Pakistan without exception. And then they end with this powerful line. This is the same clergy that apparently hates Trump, only that he would appear a human rights activist in front of them. Oh, man, that's a strong line. Because what they're saying is, and in the article and other parts, they explain this more in detail. You have a guy like Trump who all rational, sane people are against because he's fucking advocated ban all Muslims because some do bad things. Well, it doesn't make sense. You're generalizing. That's a terrible way of thinking. But he's like, well, wait a second. So they're all against Trump, all these Pakistani clergy. But then you, in the next breath, will not only be bigoted against the other if they're not Muslim, even Muslims from within your own community, you're like, well, no, I don't like that one because that branch I disagree with. And they have laws on the books to persecute the Ahmadis. So look at this rank, disgusting, grotesque hypocrisy. This is something that obviously needs to change. You need some kind of a political and religious revolution from within Pakistan in order to change this. And unfortunately, you know, there's a tight lockdown because anybody who dares to even speak up in favor of something like that, they come and get you immediately. So, you know, everybody should be careful if you're from within that community and you want to judge the other and bad people like Donald Trump for how bigoted and wrong they are. Yeah, no, let's all do that, but check yourself too, bitch, okay? Because you should probably police your own bigotry and your own double standards and your own biases before you go after the other, lest you be a pathetic hypocrite. All right, more. Koval is a student at Fairlawn High School in New Jersey, and she was accused of bullying for daring to express unpopular opinions on social media. So Carbonated reports here, quote, Koval, who is Israeli Jewish herself, published a series of social media posts during the holiday break where she criticized Israel for its atrocities against the Palestinians. At one point, she even called Israel a, quote, terrorist force for killing 2,104 innocent Palestinians in 2014 bombings. Although the 16-year-old statements and views remained confined to Twitter, on Wednesday, Principal James Marcella confronted her with the printouts of her social media updates and threatened to file a bullying case against her. So this is incredible. What happened is somebody complained from within the school that they didn't like what she said, and the school took action. I mean, this is bizarre in so many ways because she wasn't at school. She wasn't directing the comments to any other classmate at school. She was on break by herself, updating her social media, giving her own opinion on political issues, and somebody else saw it and said, I now would like to censor this person because they hurt my feelings for disagreeing with my beliefs. Let me talk to the principal. And then the fucking principal took action. Who does that? Somebody complained because of something somebody did on their break on social media, not even directed at you. And then you're like, yeah, no, totally. This is an injustice. We must right this wrong. So the principal is, quote, considering filing a bully report. And when Cobalt disagreed and said she had not done anything problematic, he replied, quote, well, that's your interpretation. There's a state law that might interpret it differently. Oh, stop it. So they're threatening legal action? Okay, I'm going to read that one more time. That's your interpretation. There's a state law that might interpret it differently. So they're threatening legal action. Anti-bullying legal action. Because somebody made a comment that's politically incorrect that somebody else disagreed with within the school when they were on break. Oh, we have to stop it. This is so police statey and authoritarian, and it's such a crackdown on civil liberties. And understand something, guys. You don't even need to agree with her to defend her. Just like we talk about all the time, you know, to defend the right to X is not to defend the substance of X. So the old example in U.S. history and U.S. politics and case law is when you had the ACLU defend the KKK to do a peaceful march through a minority community. You would think that the ACLU is liberal. They're not going to defend the KKK, but they did. Want to know why they did? It was principled. So they don't like what they're saying, but they have a right to say it. You could take the same position here where, you know, you could be staunchly in favor of the Israeli government and you could think that, you know, Israel is more persecuted than the Palestinians and you could have whatever opinion you want. But still come out here and say, free speech is non-negotiable. You don't get to censor people or shut them down or threaten them with an anti-bullying lawsuit because they express something on social media that you disagree with. And furthermore, look, I don't even think she's necessarily wrong on the substance of what she's saying. This is a point that I've made before on the show. I don't know why we have this double standard when it comes to terrorism, where in the West we have so much trouble calling a given action of us or our allies state terrorism. Yeah, it's terrorism. Terrorism is defined as doing violence for a political or religious belief. So do violent actions for a political or religious ideology. Okay, yeah, so you absolutely can say that obviously our enemies who we call terrorists, we rightly call them terrorists, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, you name it, but then there are times when the U.S. government acts in a terrorist way, no question about it. There are times when the Israeli government acts in a terrorist way, no question about it. Bombing schools or hospitals, that's a terrorist action. The U.S. bombing the hospital in Kunduz, that's a terrorist action. Killing 90% civilians when you do your drone strikes because you don't give a shit about who the, quote, intended target is, that's a terrorist action. Let's be objective about this, guys. It drives me crazy that people who think they're so intellectual and smart and objective, they have such a blind spot on this where it's like, whatever the other side does always is terrorist by definition, and we never do anything terrorist by definition. Well, then stop pretending like you think in a scientific way and you think in an objective way. Because the way that would work is you have a definition and you apply it across the board. So even when it's uncomfortable to say that's the right conclusion, you have to come to that conclusion. If you're killing between 60 and 80% civilians, chances are you don't really give a shit about civilian casualties as much as many people think you do. Okay, so, and to argue against that also, to be clear, that doesn't mean that you're more broadly arguing against the existence of Israel. I would argue against what they did with this gross bombing campaign, but I would never say, get rid of Israel. No, that's a huge leap in logic. If you think that's what she's saying, that's not what she's saying. And that's certainly not what I would say. I want a two-state deal so that we can have long-term peace in the region and we can increase our prospects down the road in order to work together and then raise generations that don't fucking hate each other like they do right now. I think a two-state deal is the way to go on that front. But it starts with people not wantonly killing civilians on both sides, on both sides. But to censor somebody because you disagree with what some political statement they made when they were on vacation, Oh, I mean, come on. Can we all agree that this goes way too far and we should protect her right to free speech? And by the way, if the situation was reversed, I would be arguing the same point. So if somebody made some points about how, you know, hey, the evil, terrible, bad, barbaric, savage Palestinians and, you know, the poor Israelis are persecuted endlessly, somebody could make all those arguments. Would I be on the side of somebody who said, hey, do an anti-bullying case against this person because I saw them make social media posts that I disagree with when they were on vacation? I would never take that person's side, arguing for the right of somebody to say that and to disagree with me. Because, again, it's not even about the substance of X. It's just about the right to do X. And they're coming for that right, and they're taking it away. We all need to stand up for free speech. It's non-negotiable. Okay. I got two more left, and probably not enough time to get them in, but I'm going to try. Oklahoma has had a terrible problem recently as a result of the proliferation of fracking. They're getting more and more earthquakes now. The Associated Press says about this, the state commission that regulates Oklahoma's oil and natural gas industry ordered some injection well operators to reduce wastewater disposal volumes on Monday after at least a dozen earthquakes hit an area north of Oklahoma City, in less than a week. Oklahoma's energy regulator declared in November that the state now has more earthquakes than anywhere else in the world, which scientists have linked to wastewater injections, a long-used method to dispose of the chemical-laced byproduct of oil and gas production. About 1.5 billion barrels of wastewater was disposed underground in Oklahoma just last year. Okay, that is absolutely staggering to read that. And, I mean, seriously, at least a dozen earthquakes in less than a week? Yeah, we have a problem here, and this isn't just a natural cycle. I know the Republicans love to default to that argument when it comes to any concern about the environment, but I'm here to tell you that's fucking wrong, and it's silly that you believe that. So let me show you a chart of earthquakes in Oklahoma, and you'll see just how bad the problem is. Oh, sweet Jesus, can we stop this? Oh, my goodness. Yeah, for everybody listening live and you can't see it, here's how you sum it up. Very few earthquakes, very few earthquakes, very few earthquakes. Good googly moogly, a lot of earthquakes. So this is directly as a result of fracking. There's been studies that have shown that, indeed, fracking leads to an increase in earthquakes. So this goes to show you how silly humans can be. We'll put things off and put things off and put things off until it's too late or until the problem is so bad that you can't ignore it in any way, and then you're forced to take action. There seems to be something that's in our nature. We're doing it right now with climate change, too. And if you look at it objectively, try to view it if you were like an alien just seeing how humans act, you would say, oh, that's really stupid. Like, you should try to do something before there's this gigantic problem. And now we have fucking 12 earthquakes or more within a week, and we're just starting to think, you know, maybe a little bit less of that wastewater injection stuff that's causing the earthquakes. No, we should go further now, and we should really heavily regulate fracking, if not banning fracking. I mean, there are some countries that have flat-out banned fracking. There are some states. My state, New York, has banned fracking because of all the tremendous downsides, the earthquakes, the poisoning of the water system, which happens all the time because of the runoff of the different carcinogenic chemicals and whatnot into the water system. There's a trillion reasons to crack down on it and to regulate it or to ban it, and there's really only one reason not to, and it comes down to money and our addiction to fossil fuels. How about we start moving off of fossil fuels completely? How about that? How about we move towards green technology, renewable technology, and we make it so that we leave our grandkids and our great-grandkids a shot to actually survive and not be fucked over by our actions? Okay. Let me give you – do I have time? Okay, yeah, I got 5 minutes. I'll do one more here. It's the one that I was kind of mocking before. They're going to be mad at me for this one, but whatever. A few years ago, a macaque monkey, make your own joke about that one, took a selfie, and now there's a court case that developed out of this because there was some kind of a copyright dispute over the picture. Well, a U.S. judge just ruled that the monkey indeed does not have its own copyright to its picture. And who was there to argue the opposite case and say, yes, indeed, the monkey should have the right to their own picture? That would be PETA. So let me give you exactly what was said, what the court ruled. Quote, while Congress and the President can extend the protection of law to animals as well as humans, there is no indication that they did so in the Copyright Act. Okay, I love that because of how plain it is. It's almost like a South Park writer said that. Like, yeah, no, if the government wants to, they could extend protections kind of wherever they want. But they didn't add macaque monkeys in the Copyright Act. Yeah, this story actually gets under my skin because I think that PETA is doing a disservice to the idea of the animal rights movement. Now, if you talk to me about that issue, broadly speaking, I actually agree with it. So I don't agree with everything they do. I don't agree with how far they go sometimes. But to the idea of, hey, we have these factory farms, they're a fucking problem, and they force-feed these animals in disgusting ways. They feed them shit that they're not even really supposed to eat naturally. They're cooped up in cages and they can't turn around and they live miserable, disgusting, grotesque lives and then they're killed in horrific ways. Should we do something about that? I say yes. I say do proper regulation. Make it so that, you know, your food lives a decent life. I know it sounds weird to say, but before you kill it. I mean, I know it's weird, and it's a very complex topic that requires a lot of time to dive into all the nuance of it, but broadly speaking, yeah, animals should be treated properly and correctly, and we shouldn't be super douchey about how we treat them, and, you know, common sense reform I would be on board with. So that's my take on it overall, but when you have PETA coming out there and saying that a literal monkey has a copyright for a selfie they took by accident. But no, see, PETA, that makes no sense, and you're making a mockery of the entire animal rights movement because I got news for everybody. It's not like that monkey is going to be able to demand money from people who post it on YouTube or people who post it on Google Images or who use it themselves in a commercial or something like that. How is the monkey going to ask for that stuff when the monkey can't talk to humans? The monkey ain't going to be in a court in a suit and tie like, that's not going to happen. So this is a caricature. This is a parody. You know, you're trying to pretend that this animal has the exact same, agency as a human, and that's not the case. Again, I'm not for treating the animals like shit, but I'm also not for pretending that they're like Bob and Steve, your next-door neighbors. So just be smart about it and don't overreach, and you're reaching so much here that you're besmirching the good things that animal rights people do. So overall, needless to say, I agree with the court, and I think it's weird that it even got this far. Should a monkey have copyright protections? No? How about that? All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow for the Friday show. Peace.